Good morning. I always wondered what people were saying when they would get up and say, it's been good to be here this morning and we could just close and go home. And I always wondered, why didn't we just do it? And if I did what I felt like this morning, that's what I would do. I'm not sure why. Originally, when I started to look at this topic, I was planning to do one Sunday, and then it turned into two. I think we're going to end with two, but it's a subject that is not, I don't know that you can talk about it enough. Last Sunday, we looked at Deuteronomy 6, verses 4, 6 and 7, and we're going to still be kind of in that this morning, but mainly this morning we want to look at verse 7. And I want to look at practical application this morning. And so there's not a whole lot, we're not going to spend a whole lot of time looking at different verses. There are a few that we're going to be bringing in. But if you think about, and the questions that I asked you at the end of last Sunday's sermon were out of the passage that we read, and I'm going to read it again, just simply to refresh our minds. Verses 4, 6, and 7 of Deuteronomy 6. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your strength. These commandments that I give you today are to be upon your hearts. Impress them on your children. Talk about them when you sit at home and when you walk along the road, when you lie down and when you get up. And what I want to talk about this morning is, As I come to this subject, I recognize my own failures. I recognize where I many times fell short. And unfortunately, sometimes when I recognized it, it was too late. I was past that point, not too late. I was past the point of where it really affected my children. And sometimes it was habits that I have. Sometimes it was things that maybe I didn't always do right. But I realized that looking back and coming back to it, every time when I came back to my children and said, I want to fix this, they were very generous in allowing me to do that. They didn't always like the fix. One of the things that we're going to talk about this morning is calm parenting. And one of the authors that I used for some of my stuff was preaching a message, and he was talking about that, and he and his wife, they had three daughters. I think they were like 7, 9, and 11, somewhere in that age. And one of the things that they recognized was that they weren't always calm parents. And sometimes there would be a little bit of yelling and that kind of stuff when things didn't happen. So they came home, they talked, and they set their girls down, and they said, girls, from here on, this is what's going to happen. We give you the expectations. Here are the consequences. There will be no more yelling. It's going to be expected for you to do this. The 9-year-old sat there for a minute. She said, can we just keep on yelling? She didn't want the consequences. Children will adapt to what they have to adapt to. The sad thing is, children will adapt to bad parenting as well. Now, when I say that, I'm not looking out here saying we have bad parents, okay? So please don't take that different. But one of the things that I did learn in my time when I was serving as principal of the school was that children will adapt to bad authority figures, and it's not good. And when I mean bad, I mean someone that's not consistent, someone that is not clear and doesn't follow what needs to happen. And so in saying that, I'm not saying bad as far as morally bad, but simply in, at times we as parents get in a hurry, we say things, we don't follow through, and our children look at it and say, okay, that didn't mean a whole lot. So what I want to give this morning is some practical things that maybe you can take and make something different if you're dealing with struggling on how to do the parenting thing. Parenting is an experiment. Some people do well with it. Some people are always experimenting. And some people just kind of fumble through it. And this morning, I want to give you some tools so that we don't have to fumble through it. We don't have to. I will tell you that one of the best experiences that I had was working as a chief at camp. I wasn't there real long, but I had enough time there that I got some tools. And I really value those tools. And so this morning, I want to try to help pass some of those on. But three things that I gave you to think about last week at the end of the sermon, at the end of the message. And it came out of Deuteronomy 6. The three points were love God, love others, and teach. So the questions that I ask at the end were, do I love God with all my being? Does my family see the fruit of my love for God? Do I value integrity? How do others see my love for God? Are my relationships with others healthy? How do I respond to correction from others? How do my children see me relate to others at home, at church, or at work? And am I consistent in my relationships? And then the third one was, how well am I doing in my teaching? Is what I say and portray to others consistent with what my spouse or my children see at home? Psalm 90, verse 12, tells us to number our days so that we may get a heart of wisdom. And I want to talk about that a little bit. The time that you have with your children. This month, Phyllis and I will celebrate 39 years, and it doesn't seem that long. Our oldest will be, or is 38. I have no idea how old she is. She's less than 39, I know that. 37, 38, somewhere in there. I can't keep up with them anymore. But it goes fast. It goes way faster than I'm ready for. When I look at the reality of where I am today, I'm older than my grandfather was when he died on my dad's side. So in essence, I'm on borrowed time. Now my dad's 82, so hopefully I can kind of hit that end a little more because I want a little more time. But I want to, the first point that I have, there's 7 points that I have this morning, and then I have some slides at the end with some other just more practical things that we should be teaching. But the first one is being intentional versus being reactive. How many of you, and I'm not going to ask you to raise your hand, because I think every one of us find ourselves here at times, how many of you find yourself parenting in reaction mode? You do. It's a fact. So how do you move from parenting in reactive mode to intentional? Have you ever really sat down and figured out how much time you have with those children? How many days? If you use 18 years, how many days do you have per child? Days. Now that sounds like a lot, but in reality it's not, because You got to live. You got to work. Life comes into there. And so that really gets limited because, yes, you do have 18 years, but it's short. It's shorter than you realize when you're potty training or when you're spending all night up with a sick child. That seems like an eternity, I know. But trust me, it's not. It's not near long enough when you really sit down and figure it out. But it's what you have. Are you a person who makes your decisions based on emotions or facts? How do you approach all of life? Do you just wing it or do you plan out how it's going to be? Now, this morning in our Sunday school class, we talked about being in the ditch. You can be in both ditches. So winging it and planning everything out, both of you are going to be in trouble. I mean, there's a point here where you can't just wing it and you can't plan everything out because children are children and they're going to throw you a curve every now and then. The opposite of intentional is to be reactive. So that is your default mode. That is our default, not yours. Our default is to be reactive. Something happens, we react to it, we deal with it, we move on. Being intentional means that you have a plan. Now, which would you think is easier? Which is most effective? I would say that probably because it's our default mode, the easier one is to be reactive. But I don't think it's as effective as we want it to be. When you parent reactively, you either live in fight or flight. In the heat of emotion, it's extremely difficult to make a wise parenting decision. And that's in all of life. When I base my decisions strictly on emotion, I'm going to struggle. I'm going to really struggle to make the right choice. When I'm parenting in the emotion of the moment, you know, one of my favorite sayings was, life ain't fair. It's not. I mean, I can give you a whole lot of reasons why it's 61 and a half. I still think life ain't fair. Because, anyway, leave it alone. But the thing is, if I base the way I teach my children on life being fair, I'm going to make that decision based on the emotion of the moment and say, we're going to talk about this a little later, but let's just say I have something where the line was drawn in the sand and the child chooses not to obey that, and I'm like, well, you know, maybe you really didn't mean to do it. Now, that could be true. However, if the child knew what the consequences were and they chose not to obey it, then it should be clear what the consequences are. So, example. I'm speeding down the road. I know the speed limit is 55, and I come through this school zone, and I don't slow down. And a deputy's sitting right here, and he stops me, and he says, sir, do you know there was a school zone there? And I say, yeah, I did. Why didn't you slow down? I just didn't. There's consequences, and I don't like them. So we must be intentional in how we do this. The second thing is a little more complicated in our culture today, and that is raising engaged children versus isolated children. How many of you remember Dick Tracy, the comic strip? You know, there was a part of that comic strip that I, as a child, even thought, there's no way this will ever happen. He had a two-way radio on his watch. How many of you have a thing on your wrist right now? A few of you do sometimes. I'm going to rebel and never get one. I shouldn't say that because I don't want to. But I remember reading that and seeing that and thinking, that'll never happen. Well, we do today. We have that. Basically, it's here. And you know, I remember a couple years ago when we were struggling with something and Phyllis was not doing well physically, and I went to my office at like 2 o'clock in the morning, and I sent an email out that went to Romania. It went across the world in a matter of seconds, asking people to pray. There's good in our electronic age, but there's some really bad stuff happening in our electronic age. Most of us, all of us, I would say, have a device on us right now that we can contact someone across the world within seconds. And we can find out anything we want to know or need to know or don't need to know within seconds. And unfortunately, we don't unhook from that enough. And often what is happening is we're finding ourselves giving our children those devices younger and younger and younger, and it's not working. It's not healthy. Psychologists are saying that they're seeing children who will not give eye contact because they don't know how to do relationship anymore. You are the parent. It is your responsibility to limit that time. It's your responsibility. You own that. And I ask a question. Why does a 12-year-old need a phone? I don't know. I'm not going to answer it. I'll let you answer it. This is something that I saw happening in one of our customers' homes who, they're Christians, and one of the things that was very important in designing the kitchen was the charging station for the devices. And there were, three, four, five slots. And at night, before she goes to bed, she goes to that charging station, and every device better be in that station charging. Her comment was, there's absolutely no reason for my children to have their device in their bedroom at night. There were consequences if they didn't, and I remember one day the one child had violated that, and I was there helping, and he was muttering about something, and she looked at him and she said, "One more word, and it's going to be another week." His attitude changed pretty quick. You set the consequences. You set the terms. And it should not be negotiable. That's one that I learned not too late, but I learned that we as parents must be in tune with what's happening in our children's lives and how much time they're spending on that phone, on that device, and the time. Number three is have defined boundaries instead of flexible boundaries. All of us would agree that defined boundaries are better. But what does it look like? And it begins with you as the adults, father and mother, deciding what those boundaries are, but then clearly communicating those to your children. Go back to the previous one and where we talked about screen time. Would you give your 10-year-old the keys to your car? Probably not. I think my dad did that one time and I ran into the side of the house. It wasn't too smart. He did it, but it wasn't too smart. It didn't work out good for him. I don't even remember. I don't think he got mad at me. I think he just stood there and looked at it. He might have been mad. But you as the parent need to have defined boundaries in how that's going to look, and you need to decide what's going to happen if those boundaries are violated. Think about it. I wouldn't give my child, my 10-year-old child, the keys to the car because their maturity level, they can't handle it. It's the same thing with the devices that we have, with other things that we allow our children to do. We must decide how that looks. And we must work with it and stick with it. The Doug Fields makes this comment. He says, quick fix parenting looks like handing kids screens to enjoy temporary peace and quiet, but intentional parenting devises a plan, communicates the plan, enforces the plan. So there's a three-step to that. You create the plan, you communicate the plan, and you enforce it. And when we live in a reaction, it's like, you know, the easy thing to do is say, well, you know, just spend extra time there. I don't have time to deal with that. If you as a parent don't have time to deal with it, there's too much going on. You need to figure that out. This one was a little more difficult for me to kind of wrap my head around, but I agree with him. And child-centric versus couple-centric family structure. Now, that's a complicated title there. But in mainstream USA, the children have become the focal point of the family structure. And we're spending all of our time taking them to soccer, dance, you name it. There's all these things that are happening. And those children are the center of the world. They should be of your world. But while they are a main focus, they should never be the center of your family structure. As counterintuitive as it seems, especially if you haven't experienced this balance, the best thing for you can do for your children is to make it clear that your spouse is more important than they are. Might be a new one for your children. But you know what? They need to know that your spouse is so important to you that you will protect them no matter what. And that they come after the other parent. Who is the first person you greet when you come home, men? It should be your wife. Now I realize there's youngins that come tearing to the door and they get there first. That's okay. Pick them up, go to your wives. It's okay. But make sure that they see you making that your spouse more important. Because you know what happens to a child that's the center of everything? And they think they're the center of the universe. You end up with an adult that thinks they're everything. And they're not. And one day they're going to have a real rude surprise when they discover that the world does not revolve around them. So help them. You are the one that needs to help them see that yes, they are important to you, but no, they are not the center of the universe. Number five, clear consequences versus quick consequences. And we've talked about you setting the rules. Consequences should fit the crime, but if you do not have a clear way to deal with wrong behavior, you will find yourself either ignoring it or reacting to it. Which is worse? Ignoring it or reacting? They're both wrong. So yes, both. Being clear about consequences means what? You have to decide up front. If you don't do your homework, we're not going fishing. Or we're not going to the trampoline park. Or we're not going to Frankie's to play putt-putt. It's clear. If you pitch a fit in the grocery store, we go home. Boundaries and consequences are clear. Instead of getting angry and letting anger dictate a ramification at the moment, we enforce clear, predictable consequences. And there are many things that can be decided up front. There are times when you have to make a quick decision. That's fine. But if you have some things in your mind already, you're not going to react as quick because you've got something to go by. You discipline by choice, not by need. This is good. I like this. We can't expect kids to like the outcome of their choice, but that doesn't change the enforcement. We are not trying to be liked by your kids or establish a friendship during this season. We're trying to raise children. I was determined I wasn't going to use that word. We're trying to raise children who are responsible decision makers, who have self-confidence and positive self-esteem. Allowing them to choose is the secret to developing these foundational character traits. So you don't let them decide the consequences. You give them the consequences up front. And when they choose not to obey, they've chosen. They've chosen the consequences. Your child is free to disobey. Just make it clear before the choice is made what will happen. Calm parenting versus policing. Sometimes you need to make a decision. Communicate clearly with the child that you and your spouse will have to discuss it and come back in 1 hour. But make sure that you come back in 1 hour. It gives you time to lovingly, gracefully think through the fitting consequences for the action. Remember, calm parenting will cost you. When you choose to parent calmly, you're unafraid of the consequences, it'll cost you. Like I said, if your child is misbehaving and you have to leave Frankie's because they're misbehaving and you've already told them, you leave. I saw one of my children do that, and they had gone to a place where the children were excited about going. The child, I don't remember if it was one or two. I don't even remember when it was now, but I remember the story. And there was a meltdown. And mom and dad were looking forward to that. Not the meltdown. They were looking forward to the time away. And when the meltdown happened, they just looked at the child and said, "We're going home." They had paid for a motel. They had taken time off. And they went home. And I think it was the right choice. They made a decision because of what was happening. So being a parent that makes those decisions up front could cost you. Calm parenting allows you to peacefully remove your child and yourself from a turbulent situation, regardless of the cost, inconvenience, or commotion. It might cost you in the short term, but imagine the effectiveness of that one move when that child realizes that you will keep your word, even if it costs you. Number 7, outcome faith versus modeled faith. And we talked about this a lot last Sunday, about our relationship with God and our relationship with others. Parents, I want you to remember this. You are the single biggest influence in those children's lives. Yes, there's other influences, but you are their hero. And yeah, there's a time there where you're not going to be their hero. They're not going to like everything you do, and they're going to argue with you about it, and they're going to make sure you know that they don't like what you're doing. But you're still their hero. Don't let that relationship break because of that. Don't outsource your influence to the media or friends. When Moses told the children of Israel to teach their children diligently, to talk about it when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, and when you rise, we talked about this a little bit last Sunday. Everything you do should be teaching your children. Everything. Your responses, the things you do, the things you say, that should be all of life. Proverbs 22, verse 6. Train up a child in the way he should go, and even when he is old, he will not depart from it. Now, and I want to be careful with that verse, because that verse doesn't mean that child is always going to make the right choices. But I will promise you, if you teach that child right, they'll never forget. They still have a choice to make, and they may not live out that choice in the right way. If you've done your part, that's up to them. I have some things here that I found in one of my father-in-law's stash that I got some years ago. There's 24 things that I want to just go through this morning that... this thing's not going to cooperate now. Anyway, it'll cooperate eventually. But there's 24 things here that I believe are very important to teaching. And in our culture, we're losing it. A lot of things. We're losing a lot of things. And I don't mean here necessarily, but out of these 24 things, you're probably going to see some things that maybe you could work on. And I saw things that I should have worked on, and I wish I had. But they're very key to helping our children become adults who are functioning adults who are respected and who respect each other. Number one, teach them to be courteous. Dad, if we're not, or mom and dad, if we're not courteous, our children are going to pick that up very quickly. To show consideration for others. To share, to have a forgiving spirit, to be quiet. All right. Hang on, something's not working here. It worked fine this morning. All right. All right, I'm just going to have to say them. It's not cooperating. Oh, you know what? Is that thing plugged in back there? Well, I know. Shouldn't. No, still not working right. There we go. It's going to work better. To earn money, to save money, and to spend money. We teach them by the way we handle our finances, the way we work, the things that we do. But you know what? We can walk with them, and you know it's okay if you give them allowance and you kind of set the rules on how they're going to spend that money. One of the things that we did is we gave our children a set amount and we said 50% of it goes into savings. You're going to tithe off of 100% of it. And then you can do whatever you want with the rest. And it was interesting how every now and then I would get a request for a loan. And I would say, when's your allowance due? Monday. Go have it Monday. I'm not loaning it to you. Because I wanted them to learn that the consequences of spending my money on things that I didn't really need when something I really wanted, I didn't have it. It worked out some and it didn't always work out. But anyway, it was a lesson that I wanted to teach my children. To obey parents. To obey all authority. To work. To play well with others, to accept others, to read. That's one that's being more and more difficult because as we have more devices, we're reading less and less and less. And we need to cultivate that. to study. I find that one of the things I find interesting is how often people are put into leadership positions and they don't like to read, and when it comes to studying, they struggle because they haven't learned to read. To study is important. To memorize, that was one of my weak points. My children did much better than I did. To eat foods that are prepared. We had a rule that you took something, some of everything that was at the table. The caveat to that rule was you had a choice to take the amount that was acceptable. And you had a second chance, and if the second chance wasn't enough, guess who got to put it on the plate? And with every grumble, there was more got put on the plate. I think with every one of the children, that happened twice. Some of them got it the first time. But it didn't take long for them to figure out they wanted to put it on the plate. They didn't want me doing it. I didn't say a word. I would just say, give me the spoon. And it was like, I got this, Dad. The consequences were clear. It was decided up front. But they didn't always like it. They didn't always like the food. That's fine. You don't have to like it. I to this day don't like cooked cabbage, but I'll eat it. If it's put on the table, I'll eat it. I haven't figured out why people like it, but anyway. To accept decisions that are made, when they're made, when you make a decision, you follow through with it. If it's wrong, you fix it. If it's not wrong, you keep moving. To start and complete assignments. This one is important because you all know, all of us as adults know that as employees, when our employer gives us an assignment, he expects us to finish it. Not get 80% done and lose interest and boom, I'm gone. So teach them to start and complete assignments. It's not always going to end up the way you want it to be, but it's good. To understand biblical words like humble, meek, rich, poor, salvation, blood, virgin birth. Those are important terms that we need to help our children understand. In our Sunday school lesson, we talked about that this morning. Why is it that we lose some of these things from generation to generation? And I believe it's because we don't talk about them. We don't spend the time teaching them. And it's not just your pastor's job to teach it. It's your job to help to do that. To control their temper. Hold it. To control their tongue. To pray. To love. To sing. To testify of God. Back to the quote that I gave last Sunday. Fear does not keep you from dying, it keeps you from living. I concluded last Sunday's message with some questions, and I've gone through those already this morning. I'm not going to go back through them again. But today, there's seven questions I want you to think about. Am I parenting intentionally, or am I parenting reactively? Am I raising engaged or isolated children? Do I have defined boundaries or flexible boundaries? Am I raising self-centered children or family-centered children? Do I parent with clear consequences or quick consequences? Am I a calm parent or a policing parent? Is my faith and my love for God on display to my children? And I made that specific to my children because I believe that if that is a fact in our homes, it's going to go farther than just at home. So the simple thing is my faith and my love for God on display to my children? Scott, do you have a song? Okay. You can stand. Father, this morning, we are so grateful for the families that you've given us. And as people who are engaged in other people's lives, the families of the children around us, not just our own children, and if we don't have children, the children of those that we interact with, that you've given us to be able to influence, to be able to insert good values and biblical values and the gospel into their lives, that they can take the next generation and build on what they've been taught and make it better. Help us as parents, when life is busy, to step back and realize that to be intentional means to take time and to teach. God, the words of Moses to all of us are to teach in all that we do and how we live. I just pray this week that you would help us to be intentional in our walk with you and intentional in our walk with our families and with each other. Guide us. Give us wisdom. Show us where we need to correct and how to do that through your Spirit and the power that you give us. God, walk with us this week and help us to live according to your word and your will. In Jesus' name, amen.